I'm Josh Scherer.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Everything's coming together at the practice facility for the Commanders today. Terry McLaurin is practicing. It's happening.
That's right. Here we go.
And Noah Brown is on the practice field as well. So Jaden Daniels getting his weapons back just in time for the start of the season. The show is brought to you exclusively by the law firm Cundori & Murad, estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a consultation for free today with them. Visit kmlawyers.com and mention us. They'll give you a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. We've been talking Terry McLaurin. We just told you Noah Brown's back at practice. Let's stick with the wide receiver theme and go around the NFL as we get you ready for your fantasy drafts this week. And to help us, we'll go to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, and talk to a guy you and I both get a lot of insight from throughout the season as Yahoo Fantasy guys. Yahoo Sports fantasy writer Scott Pianowski is with us on G&D. Scott, thank you for hopping aboard. How are you?
For having me, and no better time than to discuss fantasy football. It is the biggest draft weekend coming, the long holiday weekend, so I'm sure a lot of people are boning up for their leagues. Let's give them some help.
We actually have two drafts coming up for me, and I think two for Danny in the next couple days. We've got our Listener League fantasy draft at a pizza spot in town tonight with a bunch of our listeners. So this is a very well-timed segment, very well-timed interview. I actually want to start with Terry McLaurin locally for the Commanders. How much of a fantasy value ding do you give him for the lack of an offseason? Do you anticipate either a pitch count or a slow start to begin the year?
It may be a slow onboarding, but yeah, I've always loved McLaurin's professionalism since he turned pro. And you guys know more than anybody, all we ever wanted was just to see him play with a plus quarterback, and he finally finds it with Jaden Daniels. He would like the contract stuff to get resolved sooner. So be realistic with what you expect from McLaurin maybe for the first 2 or 3 weeks, although that theme kind of goes through the NFL, right? So many teams don't use their starters or their primary guys or their primary plays in the preseason. So week 1 and week 2 often become glorified exhibition weeks because the shape of the summer has changed. I still have McLaurin slotted right now, I think wide receiver 13 or 14, so a very high-end wide receiver too, somebody I would probably look for around the fourth round.
Scott, give me the wide receivers, standard, I say now standard, PPR format, that you think are first-round worthy draft selections.
A bunch of them. I have 7 you could consider. Jamar Chase, probably the 1-1 in most leagues, so I don't need to sell anybody on him. CeeDee Lamb's my number 2 receiver. I think Dallas junks the running game early this season. Let's Dak cook, and that means Lamb's going to catch 100 balls. Justin Jefferson tied to the quarterback whisperer. Kevin O'Connell will eventually get J.J. McCarthy going, although that might be a slow onboard too. They don't have Addison right away, and you don't want to overexpose McCarthy, but we've just seen O'Connell do it with every quarterback he's had. So I don't have any problem with Justin Jefferson. Amon-Ra St. Brown, the sun god in Detroit. I know they lost Ragnow, their center. I know they lost Ben Johnson, their very well-regarded coordinator. He's in Chicago now. But when you have a veteran quarterback, he's basically part of the offensive coordinator infrastructure too. And St. Brown, just a very safe 100, 105, 110 catches. I would take him in the first round. Nico Collins, my number 5 receiver. Houston running game could be a problem. Mixon won't be ready to go. Offensive line was bad, and then they traded their best lineman in Laremy Tunsil. I think Nico Collins might get 170 targets. C.J. Stroud's better than he played last season. Collins belongs in the first round. And then Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, and I've flip-flopped them back and forth right now. I have Thomas 6 and Nabers 7, probably first-rounders. I know some people are a little bit nervous about Thomas because they obviously drafted Hunter, won the Biletnikoff, he won the Heisman, he won all the trophies last year. He'll play a little bit of defense, but Liam Cohen comes in. He's a coach we respect, much like Ben Johnson. He's somebody we're excited about. He got Baker Mayfield the 41 touchdowns last year. So we don't know if Trevor Lawrence will ever become a star, but if it's going to happen, it's going to happen now. So I think Thomas, who was terrific last year despite bad play around him, belongs in the first round. You can say the same thing about Nabers, right? That quarterback room was not good last year. It should be better. Russell Wilson is still quasi-competent. At some point, Jackson Dart will play. And Nabers is one of those guys. When receivers, you draft them early, you want them targeted off the bus. And all Brian Daboll does every day until he goes to sleep is scheme ways to get Malik Nabers the football. So 160, 165, 170 targets might be in play. So I would be comfortable taking any of those guys in the first round. There's seven to choose from.
Scott Pianowski is with us of Yahoo Fantasy Sports on Grant and Danny. Let's go back to Ja'Marr Chase at the top of the board.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking a lot on the show about Saquon Barkley this week and this idea of the history that states when you have the type of workload he had last year that you just don't play in more than 10 to 12 games the following season. What do we know historically about receivers that go bonkers? Like Chase going 125 catches, 1,700 yards, 17 touchdowns. I know it's prime of his career. He's 25 years old, all that stuff. But if I'm taking him number one overall, can I pencil that back in?
The thing with Chase, this is the way I feel about any high pick in any fantasy league. I would say this for fantasy baseball. I would say for fantasy football. I'd say for any fantasy sport you play. All you want if you draft Chase, I know you want him to smash the league and have all those leading stats, you know, 127, 1,708, and 17. He led the league in all three categories. It's unrealistic to expect that. But what did he do the previous season? 100 catches, 1,216 yards. Burrow missed time that season. He's tied to an elite quarterback in Burrow. Heisman Trophy winner, MVP candidate. Cincinnati defense is really bad. The passing game is extremely concentrated in Cincinnati. They only really throw the ball to a couple of guys. So that's good. 175 targets last year, age 25 season. So Chase presumably in his prime. And although we didn't see this play out last year where the running backs, other than McCaffrey, for the most part, were incredibly healthy and they ran pure. You know, Barkley, one of those guys you mentioned, but typically that's an injury position more than receiver is. They get tackled by the heavier guys on the defense. I do realize there's a shift in the NFL where the defenses are getting lighter. They're more worried about pass defense. That's why the running game has made somewhat of a renaissance. But when I draft Chase, if you told me he's one of the top four receivers in fantasy, I'd be fine with it. Yeah, Lamb could beat him or Jefferson could beat him. Or I mean, who knows? Maybe Drake London, who I think is an early second-round pick. Maybe he'll have a huge season. He was terrific last year when Michael Penix took over. Remember him in that Washington overtime game. But I just want my first pick to be a foundation. So right now, I would sign up for 105 catches, 1,500 yards, 12 touchdowns. I would take that, even though those would all be come down from what he did last season. I also want to mention with the Barkley thing, 482 touches last year, including the playoffs. Didn't have a touchdown from the one-yard line. That's Jalen Hurts' territory. Barkley averaged 29.4 yards per touchdown, an unsustainable rate. I know he's a great player, but I want to be young at that position. I'm taking Bijan Robinson, and I'm probably taking Jahmyr Gibbs over Barkley. And I know that might sound a little bit crazy after the season Barkley had, but that's a position where I really think it's important to have guys on the upswing, guys who are still on the front nine. As great as Barkley is, he's, you know, smack dab in the middle of his career, or maybe even starting that back nine makes me a little bit nervous.
Scott Pianowski, Yahoo Sports, getting us ready for your fantasy drafts, talking receivers here on G&D. So if you don't end up with one of the stars in that first round, just kind of the way it falls, thinking Chase, Lamb, you know, maybe Jefferson, and maybe Amon-Ra St. Brown, et cetera. How are you approaching receiver in your drafts? Are you going, you know, maybe premium position, maybe end of round one, round two, in a Bowers? Are you looking running back? Like, if I guess I'm asking kind of twofold. One, how have your drafts kind of shaken out in terms of receiver? And two, where do you think the great value is for folks that may miss out on one of the stars in round one?
So the big thing, the big fork in the road for your listeners is how many receivers do you start? If you start two or if you start three, it's a major difference in your roster building. If you only start two, I think you need two running backs in the first three or four rounds because there's just enough good receivers that everybody's going to be pretty good, even if you have a flex position that might add that third receiver. If you have to start at least three receivers, I think it's imperative that you have the best receiver room in your league, because one thing about fantasy football is that running backs, once they inherit opportunity, they can become fantasy factors. Any starting running back gets hurt somewhere, gets traded. You've obviously seen a lot of upheaval this summer in the Washington backfield. It's a little bit complicated right now. That's going to mint somebody for fantasy goodness. Now, if Tyreek Hill decides to walk to earth, doesn't want to play football anymore, that doesn't mean the next man up in Miami is a star. It doesn't work that way. You know, we've seen Kansas City have injuries in their receiver room and have trouble replacing them. So, yes, a couple of years ago, Puka Nacua came out of nowhere. He went bananas in week one, and he was a waiver wire gold. But for the most part, the receivers you're going to pick up off waivers are going to be depth guys, bye week guys, your wide receiver five, your wide receiver six. You're not going to get the wide receivers who start themselves. So if you start three or more, I would probably first four picks, probably have a running back and three receivers. If the right running backs fell, maybe two and two, and then my fifth round pick would be a receiver. And there's some really good guys in every round. I mentioned seven guys I thought were first round valuable. Second round, Drake London looks great. Ladd McConkey was a 1,600 yard pace guy for the second half of the season. Even with Allen back, I'm not worried about him. T. Higgins tied to that Cincinnati infrastructure. I'm not as thrilled with Puka Nacua because he doesn't score touchdowns, and they added Devontae Adams, who's been put on this earth to score touchdowns, and Matthew Stafford, age 37, back problem, makes me a little bit concerned. But then we get into the third round, Mike Evans. I mentioned McLaurin maybe as a fourth-round pick, but he may actually be back in the third round now that he's signed and happy and tied to Daniels. Marvin Harrison, you could consider a fourth-round, fifth-round. Guys like Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, the more of the boring veterans that I think are great wide receiver threes. Cortland Sutton is very underrated with the Broncos. Zay Flowers is always open in Baltimore, a little bit like Jameson Williams. We haven't seen him completely go crazy yet. There's a lot of competition for the ball in Baltimore, but I still think he's a value pick. If George Pickens can accept being the number two in Dallas, he'd be a great wide receiver three. Jameson Williams can score on any play on the field. Xavier Worthy is that type of guy in Kansas City, a boring value in Calvin Ridley, Tennessee. And just one more guy, I realize I'm listing half the league right now. I would have told you a month ago, Juwan Jennings was my guy in San Francisco, but he's had a calf injury. He's unhappy about his contract. I think Ricky Pearsall to get there. Last year, the fact he did anything after being shot, he actually got some reps in his rookie year. Ayuk's hurt. Obviously, Debo Samuel's in Washington now. I think Ricky Pearsall has a chance to be a breakout player and a key guy to get in your fantasy draft, probably as your third receiver.
Scott, information is very helpful. Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Scott.
There you go, your wide receiver preview, Scott Pianowski of Yahoo. We've been doing a different position every single day, so tomorrow we'll get into tight ends right here at 5 o'clock on Grant and Danny. We've got our big draft tonight. In fact, I've got two drafts tonight. Got the fantasy draft with listeners and Danny and our producers at Pupitella Pizza in Springfield. And if you want to come hang with us tonight, even if you're not in the league, you can come out and watch us do the draft. Kick it with us. And then later tonight, I got a friend's draft that I'm doing. Probably have to sit there on the computer before I leave.
Tis the season. It's with cringe that I send those calendar invites to my wife. Not that she's participating, but just to let you know that I won't be. Like, I'm not helpful.
Definitely the nerdiest thing. Well, now I'm gonna sound mean. I was going to say definitely the nerdiest thing we do, but it's not the nerdiest thing you do.
I've got nerdier stuff. Yeah, thank you.
But to tell my wife, like, I'm not going to be home because I'm hanging out. Like, just think about from her perspective.
Right.
Of guys are going to fake draft football players and fake manage teams.
Yeah. I'm doing sports D&D. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to manage a pretend football team that doesn't exist anywhere except for my login.
I don't think I've ever thought about how embarrassing it kind of is from the outside if you're not into football at all, because I'm obsessed with it and I love it and I do it all the time. But there was a great scene in This Is 40, I think it was. It was one of these movies with Paul Rudd, mm-hmm. where he was like sneaking out to do his fantasy draft.
Fantasy baseball draft.
And they were all like yelling out their players in an auction draft. And I think his wife thought he was cheating or something. And she walked in the room and she was basically more mad at that because he was sitting there with these other people and she thought it was the nerdiest thing in the world. And she lied to him about it. And she's like, what is going on here, man? Like, I actually thought you were with a woman. I didn't know you were just with a bunch of dudes talking about some second baseman from the Yankees.
Yeah.
But it was the best.
It was the most iconic scene. Right,
so
from
what
a
would
movie.
Be if fantasy sports is not your nerdiest thing? Like, what's the thing when your wife calls you on it that's like, oof, you're right. That's
right.
Bad.
Yeah, I can't defend it. Video games, certainly. Like, you know, late hours into the night about games where there's like Gil and I need like a bard and you know, sort of magic usage and mana. I mean, those sorts of things are just my wheelhouse.
I don't know what any of those words mean.
Of course you do. You're a big fantasy guy. You know all about it. So that's up there. The books I used to be able to read, like I have given up reading basically since all these children are around all the time.
Like the elf languages and stuff?
Yeah, about that kind of stuff.
That's pretty rough.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Book of Lost Tales from Tolkien or Game of Thrones stuff. And by the way, George R.R.R. Martin, whenever you get a chance, just finish those books up real quick. Waiting on you.
The Commanders are the oldest team in the NFL, and it is not close. Is that a problem? I want to get into their age and the perspective, not just for this year of them being the oldest, but how long it's been since there was a team close to them in age. I mean, hint, hint, it has been a while. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Eniade.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, thanks to Toby for the update. The most important thing that's going to happen today in sports, this YouTube agreement with Fox, a short-term extension to avoid service disruption ahead of college football Saturday with the game that everybody's been waiting all offseason for, Texas and Ohio State. So if you've got YouTube TV like me, and millions.
And millions!
Of other people. You will now get your Saturday college football dose. You will get your Commanders football on Sundays. Do we know how long the short-term agreement is? Notified customers that they have until 27, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't say. Is it just through the weekend to get us to next week? Or is this going to be through the NFL season? We need more information. But if you're wondering about Saturday and you're worried about not getting to watch the most important game on the college slate, fear not. An agreement has been reached for the short term. By the way, speaking of college football, one of our favorite college analysts, Danny Cannell, going to be stopping by, Danny, in 30 minutes to preview the weekend ahead.
He is shot out of a cannon and awesome, and this is who I think of this time of year, right? I mean, A, so knowledgeable, B, has great opinions, and I always get smarter when I listen to Danny Canny talk about the foosballs.
Back to the Commanders we go. Couple of things we have not yet discussed today that are newsy and relevant about Washington. First, I'm sure you guys have seen this. Toby's mentioned this in his updates. So Rashee Rice, the wide receiver from the Kansas City Chiefs, is going to be suspended 6 games by the NFL. Got in trouble a couple different ways, a couple different times off the field in his career. Most notably, though, there was video of him leaving a crash at a very, very high rate of speed. Thank God nobody was seriously injured or died, but people were injured in the collision. And, you know, this is the league's chance to do what needs to be done. I mean, he was charged with a crime he was found guilty of. I think he even pled guilty to a crime. He's going to have to serve some time in jail in the offseason. But they're suspending him for 6 games, which means he will be back and probably back up to speed by week 8, Monday Night Football, Kansas City and Washington. The rumor last week was that the NFL wanted to suspend him 10 games. He would have missed the Commanders game. Now, with a 6-game suspension levied, he'll be back for that game. This is the number one wide receiver for the Chiefs. Last year, he hurt his ACL and was out after 4 contests. But in the first 3 games of the season, the offense went through him.
Mm-hmm.
He went for 103, 75, and 110 receiving yards in the first 3 games last year as Patrick Mahomes' favorite target. So it's just a much better offense for the Chiefs when he's out there. Go back to his rookie year. He was an 80-catch, 938-yard, 7-touchdown guy.
And he really started to come on as the year was
totally
going along,
like,
too. Yeah,
Terry McLaurin-esque, frankly, in the second half of the season,
yep,
with the kind of production we see here from him. But he's now going to play against Washington, it sounds like, barring any kind of injury between now and then.
Yeah, they'll tread water, and they'll have him for the time that you want him. The second half, down the stretch, you know, into the playoffs, because I bet you Kansas City makes it, just kind of looking at the recent history. But, you know, it goes with an interesting room, right, where you're talking Xavier Worthy, Hollywood Brown, kind of the very, very poor man's version of Tyreek Hill, the deep threat. I mean, he's there to run vertical routes, but, you know, where their bread is buttered, it's going to be interesting. Maybe it's a little more ground and pound. Pacheco, Kareem Hunt, we're still doing that dance, but, you know, if Travis Kelce's a bit more spry, but they're still a defense and let's let Mahomes make some magic team for a while. With Rashee Rice, maybe that's a bit more dynamic. Maybe you've got some answers. Maybe you can win one of those shootouts come postseason time.
I know that the roster doesn't really seem to matter. This is very old school Patriots-esque, where you look at the skill groups or just the overall talent, and you don't really see how they're going to get to 13 or 14 wins again, why it is that they're this unbeatable team, this daunting task, this insurmountable force, basically. But with now a suspension for 6 games, until he's back, again, on paper, this Chiefs offense looks like it's going to be sluggish. I don't know how they are prolific. I don't know why they would be dynamic. Travis Kelce, he's the tight end, by the way, that just got engaged to Taylor Swift yesterday. I don't know if you guys heard about this.
I did not see anything on that.
But Kelce, based on last season, I'm comfortable saying, is no longer at the peak of his powers and his best football is behind him. I think he's a good player, so at tight end.
Still a useful player, yeah.
Noah Gray, Jared Wiley, that's a really good tight end room, and Kelce can still go out and catch 65, 70 balls probably. But you know they're going to be keeping him fresh for the stretch run as well, so you're not going to go max effort early in the season with him. Hollywood Brown gets hurt all the time. Xavier Worthy's electric. You talked about his skills. But it feels to me, again, like they're going to need the missed field goal at the end of the game. The Chiefs voodoo.
The block field goal at the end of the game.
They're going to need the defensive first win or the run game with Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt to be awesome. I just don't see how Mahomes is going to go out and put up 4,500 yards, 45 touchdowns, be back in the MVP mix, which a lot of people were saying might happen this year after this suspension.
Yeah, I don't see it either. And by the way, that's okay. Their schedule up front, by the way. How about this? Divisional game, Chargers to start. Eagles, Giants, whatever. But Ravens, the first 4 weeks, three out of those four games are pretty challenging. You said Patriots.
They play the Baltimore game in week four?
In week four.
Oh, what a break for the Ravens to get them without Rice.
Well, this reminds me, as you said, that the Patriots is the perfect comp, where if you were going to get, we're going to do the stories on the Shouty shows, what's wrong with the Chiefs as they're starting 2-2 or whatever, and you'll get a relaxed type moment where I bet you it's going to work out. I bet you in the second half of the season when they get to play, the Titans, the Raiders, a couple other teams down the stretch, you look up and you go, how did they end up at 12 wins when they started the way they did? They're inevitable. They're Thanos.
But they are one of those teams, I think, that based on the fact that they kind of accidentally won as many games as they did last year, they're a lock to regress. In other words, they were 15-2.
Yep.
So everybody knows they're not going 15-2 again. But I could see them going 11-6 and a team like Denver actually pushing them. Now, the Broncos might have to take both games from them in the West to actually get to 11-6. But if you do that and you have a tiebreaker, for the first time in nearly a decade, we could see another champion in the AFC West. I'm not predicting it, but it is inevitably going to happen at some point, and I don't know why this year wouldn't be a possibility if Denver's as good as I think they might be. By the way, when are those Broncos games? Because that would be really interesting. If they play them twice in December, I like it a lot less. But if the Broncos get them before Rice comes back for the first time, you know, maybe that's an opportunity to jump on them in the first of the two matchups.
Denver is, after their bye week, Andy Reid bye week, et cetera, and so forth. November 16th in week 11, and then in week 17 on Christmas Day.
Not ideal. So they'll have Rice for both games, and they're playing Andy Reid, who I don't remember the exact stat now, but I know at one point he was like 24-3 after an in-season bye week, basically. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best all-time at it. So that doesn't bode well for the Broncos. Are you as high on Denver as everybody else? I think they're going to have one of the best defenses in the league. And it's Sean Payton and a scheme-fitted quarterback on offense.
So on paper, yes, I am. It's one of those things where now the train has left the station and everybody's, this is the year, this is the team. It feels like a little bit premature, but all the ingredients are there, to your point. Bo Nix had it. If it wasn't for Jaden Daniels, we would be talking about how sensational Bo Nix is and was in year number one. In Sean Payton's system, that guy's got a pretty good track record about making some offense out of different pieces. Their defense is outstanding. He's a really good football coach. They're right there, knocking on the door, especially with the injuries to the Chargers and how they look on paper, not as good. And the regression coming back to the pack you'd expect for Kansas City. Again, they've got that magic ingredient, but they weren't a 15-win team last year. That's not an insult. They were probably a 12.5 or 13-win team. That's still pretty damn good. But Denver could be that. It now just feels because like everybody's in, it makes you a little nervous.
All right, I want to get back to the Commanders and their team age because this was an interesting story that came out today. This guy, Jimmy Kemsky, who covers the league out of Philadelphia, writes about age every single season. He does these deep dives into the roster, does the average age breakdown, and gives you some nuggets on that. The Commanders are the oldest team in the NFL. We knew that coming into the preseason. They are, on average, 28.09 years old, basically 28.1 years old. Not just the oldest team in the NFL right now, but Danny, this guy Jimmy Kemsky's done this dating back to 2012, where he crunches all the numbers for age per team. And the previous oldest two teams in the National Football League, when he has done this, were the 2018 Raiders and the 2023 Saints at 27.4 years old, meaning by over a half year, which does not sound like a big deal. But when these 32 teams...
When you're averaging 53, 54, yeah.
All these 32 teams are together, and they're all within 0.4, 0.3, whatever. Like, it's a big, big difference. By a half year, the Commanders in the 12, now 13 seasons of this exercise are the oldest team that he has studied and crunched the numbers on. One more piece of evidence I want to give you about just how old they are. Players at least 29 years old, on the precipice, the most in the NFL by far. You know how many the Green Bay Packers have?
It's like three.
They have four players that are 29 years old or older. Four. Washington has 25. Now, this does not mean that the Commanders can't have a good season. But what it does mean, there is a correlation. It's been proven statistically, scientifically, I'm sure, in some way as well, that the older you are, A, the more likely to get hurt you become, but B, the longer an injury recovery may take. It just means that last year Bobby Wagner stayed healthy, or Zach Ertz stayed healthy, or some of the guys that they brought in that were older. It's not a guarantee that that happens again. We all hope that it does, but this is one of the nerve-wracking elements of this team. This is one of the monsters under the bed that none of us want to think about and none of us want to talk about, and we just hope that Jaden Daniels, you know, with his baseball bat, can come save us in the middle of the night if we hear creaking under the bed. But 29 players over 25, the oldest team in the league and the oldest team in 13 seasons of the NFL, at least, that's just the time that we have based on this guy doing this, is worrisome.
Now, there are a bunch of guys that will contribute that are hurting this average, and they're specialists. I don't care about Tressway's age. I don't care about Matt Gay's age. But for everybody that wants to dismiss it because of that, no, not so fast. There are 19 players among guys that will be regular contributors. You want to call them starters, want to call them rotation pieces, you know, like think defensive line or early season and Andrew Wiley or somebody like that, whether he ends up a starter or not for 16 weeks, 17 weeks. That's not what I'm talking about. Guys that are going to play. Doesn't count Josh Johnson, who's going to ruin any average because he's 39 years old. Doesn't count Nick Ballore, who's 36. He's a special teams guy, even though I could include him. There are 19 players that will get significant snaps for this team that are 29 and older. Now, that's not ancient in real world terms, but in a sport where the average career is 2.5 years, that is. Now, it could be nothing, but it's also noteworthy, right? I think you touched on it very well. We lived a charmed life when it came to Zach Ertz last year. This is a guy that could not have been more oft injured. You know, if he was purposely kicking his shin against a metal plank.
I wanted to see where you were going to go with that.
I didn't have a good analogy set up.
That was going to be a tough plane to land.
Didn't have a great thing set up there. I was like, he couldn't have been more hurt if he tried to be.
It was a bumpy landing, but no, you didn't crash.
Sorry, everybody, about the turbulence.
The pilot had to come over after and say, sorry about that, guys. We had some crosswinds there, but hopefully you get to your connection, and thanks for flying with us on Danny Ruya Airlines.
Didn't just think about the end of the sentence before I started it, and kind of left myself in the lurch, but appreciate you flying the Finless Guys. You know, you have choices in air travel and on radio programs. We appreciate you choosing this one. Thanks for flying the Finless Guys.
So, as you look at it, there are so many guys that you think Austin Eckler last year. That's not because he was 29 that he got concussed. Like, and again, I'm not being flippant about it. Like,
correct.
That could happen to a 21-year-old, et cetera. But the history, the data, as you look at, you know, some guys, again, that are key contributors, there's a reason they can do these non-cap-killing free agent deals for guys like Will Harris, for guys like Jonathan Jones, who's 32. You can do those sorts of things because you're not tied to them long-term. Well, the flip side is, the corollary is, there's no A ready replacement. There's no developing from within. I don't know why they inherited the barest cupboard of all. Watching Kyle Hamilton get his contract today just reminds you that they took Jahan Dotson after a trade. How'd that work out? All those guys, by the way, in that deal are gone. Chris Olave would have been good. So would have Kyle Hamilton, and so on, right? But at least they got Jahan Dotson, I think made the Eagles roster. But you see the point. They're bare when it comes to that. I get it. But at the same time, this is the deal.
Looking this up here, I did not see that he got cut, so he should be on this roster. He is. Good for Jahan.
Good for Jahan Dotson.
Looks like he's still wide receiver 3.
Catch a tutty against Washington.
For John Mechie, so maybe he could push him a little bit. But by the way, the Eagles only have 5 wide receivers on their roster as well. They might be in the market to add a 6th at some point. they've got a decent little front line with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, so I don't know how much they're worried about their depth.
Yeah.
But that's a little something to monitor. All right, next, I want to get into the press conference today between the media with Dan Quinn and Adam Peters. So Quinn was asked about McLaurin's availability for week one. Not that if he's going to play or not, we know that. But is he going to be on a pitch counter? Can he be himself completely? Does he have enough time to get all the way back to speed? So you'll hear what Dan Quinn said about that. And then Peters was asked if he was surprised by how long the dispute between Terry and the team dragged on. Really, really interesting there. We will get to that next. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We will take you up to 6:30. Danny Cannell on the college football slate, including one of the games of the year on Saturday. Coming up at 6, it's finally here. Football is back. Speaking of ball, out in Ashburn today, the head coach and GM of the Commanders, Dan Quinn and Adam Peters, met with the media first time since cutdown day. They addressed the roster decisions, the forming of the 53-man group, and Terry McLaurin's dispute finally ending with a new contract for the first time. This was Dan Quinn when he was asked about if Terry McLaurin's going to be ready to be himself in week one. Did he give himself enough time to get all the way back in time for the Giants?
Yeah, absolutely it is, and it's awesome. I love coaching him. He is a rare competitor, so he'll be out on the field today with his teammates, along with Noah Brown and some others that are on the way back. So that's an important time, John, even though it's not technically game week, just to get some reps together. It's a big deal for us, and yeah, we're really pumped about it.
On the practice field today, answer at the beginning, absolutely. We'll see what the pitch count looks like. Does he play every single snap that he would have? I'm not sold that that's going to be the case. Also, in talking to Logan Paulson, our buddy who crunches all the tape and watches the All-22 so well, you know, he was saying that if he was Cliff Kingsbury, maybe he would consider just building a package for Terry and consolidating play quantity.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, maybe.
So what does that look like?
Well, the idea he had was, like, you give him 25 or 30 plays that he's going to be on the field for, and of those, you know, 6 to 8, maybe 10, whatever it is, could go his way, like super high, you know, share, perhaps. But the idea being that way he doesn't have to get the whole playbook, not down mentally, but, like, he doesn't have to get his feet under him for the entire game or the entire playbook. It's like, hey, when this is the package we think you could take advantage of, this is how you're going to be used. Like any kind of situationally used guy, if you're bringing in a second quarterback for this mobile thing you're trying out for a week, basically we're going to give you 20, 35 plays, whatever that looks like. These are the plays you'll be on the field for. We're in this look, and we'll set it up on the first drive and come back to it in the second drive. Now, that was just his idea, but I think there's probably some hope, depending on the shape that they feel like Terry's in from a football standpoint, that when he gets out there and runs around starting today, maybe they'll be impressed, and maybe he is closer to being able to go out and run 68, 70 plays. The problem is best tempo in the NFL, most no-huddle plays in the league last year, so the way they play is not for everybody.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, so I also, the alternative, I don't think Dan Quinn would come out and say, yeah, he's going to be on a pitch counter. Yeah, he's not really going to be ready. He'll be himself. He's, you know, it's time to pump up the player and make sure everybody knows that, you know, we're all brothers, we're all in this together, and we all got the commander tag, et cetera. So I still do expect a pitch count to some degree.
Brothers?
Brotherhood, yeah.
Brotherhood Bell.
Yeah, Brotherhood Bell. So it'll be interesting to see how they do it. Logan's suggestion is a good one to me. I mean, you can't have too many obvious tells where, okay, McLaurin's in the game, it's probably going his way, so, you know, he'll have to run some routes, block a few different times, and, you know, maybe use him as a decoy here and there. But, yeah, I'd expect, you know, that 20-25 snap range.
Adam Peters spoke for the first time since this deal got done. He was asked if he was surprised by how long the dispute dragged on.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we didn't want it to go this long, but that wasn't super surprising, understanding, you know, that we had a little ways to go in terms of finding middle ground. But, you know, I think, you know, it took how long it took, you know, so as long as we got to where we got, you know, we're happy. And then, you want to take their personal feelings out of everything. And, you know, luckily for us, we didn't have any ill personal feelings for Terry or Buddy or anybody in the whole negotiation. So that wasn't an issue. It was just, you know, maybe just your feelings about, you know, where you want to be at the end compared to where they want to be. But in terms of how all that went, you know, I know there were some tough times, you know, in terms of, you know, maybe some things stalled a little bit, but in the end, you always just, you know, understand, like, shoot, you see it all the time, like, everything he did for this team and everything he's done for this team and everything he did last year on the field and then everything he's done in this community, you know. You keep those things in perspective, and that's why we wanted to do this in the beginning. So, yeah, I made it pretty easy.
Sounds like the problem was just they wanted to pay him so badly.
We're trying too hard to pay him.
He was just too good of a guy, and we loved him so much. I don't know how we got to that part in the answer. But, yeah, I mean, Peters today, you heard it early on there, acknowledged there was a gigantic gap at the beginning. Mm-hmm. He didn't say it in those words, but I will. He made it clear we had a long ways to go. And some of the reports that are out there are that the team was sub $25 million a year when they started, which seems a little bit egregious, and that the player and the agent were upwards of $35 million plus, maybe over Justin Jefferson money, which seems extremely egregious. The team was closer than the player. But if that's the case and you're bridging over $10 million, well, it's no kidding. It took a long, long time if neither wanted to budge.
Without a doubt. And then you get to the, you know, using the clock, using the calendar sort of as your adversary, almost as another negotiator where, you know, hey, I don't know how to say it, but it's like you're in the room that's a certain size, and then every day it gets a little bit smaller. And eventually you're going to run out of room. And that's kind of where we were approaching, right? Where the fines could start, the acrimony could really ramp up. And you saw some of it. I mean, you saw a guy that didn't seem very happy in McLaurin. I mean, you know, the not going to the preseason game and the one he was at, just sort of, you know, sitting by himself in a hoodie and didn't seem real thrilled to kind of be a part of it at that stage. That room starts to get smaller and smaller. Use that to your advantage. And then, you know, ultimately it's burned a deal.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We will talk with Danny Cannell ahead of Texas and Ohio State, a noon game on Saturday and a huge weekend of college football. We'll do that next on the Fan.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.